Blog Talk Radio.
Happening Blog Talk Radio. Today is Tuesday, January 7th, 2020. The call-in number is 347-857-3293. Call in with your predictions and concerns for the new year of 2020.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. Thank you so much for that, Victor. What I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. My brothers and sisters, what's happening? What's going to happen in 2020? Well, here is a prediction. It has been the same as my last year's prediction, and that is things are going to continue on the level they are on now and get worse. The United States policy of divide and conquer on the world stage is running out of geographic space. China, the nationalists and the Kuomintang versus the communists. The United States supported the Kuomintang. Vietnam, North Vietnam and South Vietnam. The United States supported a separate government in South Vietnam, and we're happy to say the Vietnamese have their country and are progressing and using their own minerals and their own wealth for the people of Vietnam. North and South Korea. This is a program. We see in Iran, they overthrew a democratic elected president, Mossadegh, and then they, with the installation of the Shah, Americans supported the vicious fascist Shah who used materials of the Iranians to support British Petroleum, BP. The Shah was intended to be America's boogeyman in the area. When the people of Iran was overthrown by the people, the U.S. CIA installed Saddam Hussein in Iraq to be its boogeyman. America overthrew its boogeyman, Saddam Hussein, and placed the caretaker government in his place. And now the government that America put in place voted to expel the American air base and all Americans. And my dear friends, that opens the door for a coalition of Shiites in Iran and Shiites in Iraq. Portents of a caliphate under present-day structure. The death of Soleimani to further satisfy a constituent's bloodlust, as we spoke of before with al-Baghdadi's death, American to satisfy a constituency for American bloodlust. And as I said, we discussed that before. And then Trump threatens with forcing Iraq to pay for the American airbase in Iraq. That ain't never gonna happen. But the policy of both major political parties is to avoid significant internal issues. Not impeachment, but homelessness, immigration, health care, ecology, global warming, police terror, and our issue of political prisoners, etc. Our job is to clarify the issues while continuing to support our political prisoners. And you will hear about our political prisoners throughout the program. Next up is poetry. Our poet in residence, Professor Louis. What do you have for us the first of the new year, Professor Louis?
All right. This is a tone poem from way back home. It's a loan from me to you, consecrated, dedicated to the guy who sells knishes on the beach, within reach of everyone out there in the sun. Check your mind each time he passes by. You got no choice. You hear his voice cry, knishes, ice cold soda here. Cold soda here, hottest day of the year. Sun burning down, your skin cancer bound, frying, just lying around. And this guy is going to try to carry this humongous cooler, ice soda. Don't let it fool you. It's heavy as hell. And there's no ice cream truck bell. He got to tell you again and again. Knishes, ice cold soda here. Cold soda here. Never fear, your wishes come true. A whole lot of delicious knishes for you. Even if they're not really hot, it's food, dude. Brought with a song, wicked and strong. He's not no ding-a-dong. He's kicking the gong. Knishes, ice cold soda here. Cold soda here, the year 2019. It's not no dream, got to drag a bag of hot knishes, a 2-ton cooler. It's not much fun, kind of peculiar. This is his fate. Early and late on this great beach of recreation, inebriation, and exploitation, the congregation of untold thousands of souls, young and old, at Coney Island, this land is my land, this land is your land, but this guy got jammed, got to haul his butt, about to bust a gut, feet digging a rut, the pain of the strap on his shoulder. Where's the gain? Getting older by the minute. What you think's in it? How many knishes does it take to make the minimum wage? How many sodas he got to deal to buy himself a meal? Kind of beat, feel the heat through his feet on the burning sand. Just a man doing what he can to live, to have something to give. And it don't take long. He gives back the song. Knishes, ice cold soda here. Cold soda here, it's clear and pure, the sure sound going down of someone doing his job. It's no sob story, better go and make a video from his song. It's right, not wrong, Your Honor, forget Madonna, film this guy. Let his song fly through the world, a pearl, true blue, cut through this life with a knife, and give us a slice of the real McCoy, my boy on the beach with something to teach, one of millions under many hot suns across this earth, the worth of every little thing, every hour, every minute, the worth comes from the work we put in it, no limit, days and days to praise those who give so much and touch so little in return, the home fires will burn, Zion's train will turn around, you will lay your knishes down, even if it's that 1 minute, when you're not lonely, when the sun runs down the sky, passing by the cool breeze of night, under the street light with your girl, all through this world, your moments in time, a clear mind, a warm heart, a decent part of it all, and find better to be kind. Forget your riches. Give me the guy with the knishes. A couple of jokes. Everyday folks got to carry the weight tomorrow, struggling not to carry it with sorrow, reaching for our place in the sun when Sam Cooke says a change is gonna come for each and every one. Respect come round from reaching down to give out with the sound that makes the world go round. Knishes, ice cold soda here. Cold soda here, never fear our fate to carry the weight, but still get over Rover, got no other way to go. He slow fades and fades away, down the beach, out of reach, but day to day, today, it's in your mind to stay. Knishes, ice cold soda here.
Well, this is the view of the world condition from Coney Island Beach. Yes, it is the view of the world condition from the Coney Island Beach until we, the people, change it to a better world. Thank you, Professor Louie. Look forward to your message next week. Next up is Tom Syracuse, who has words for us. Go ahead, your mic is open.
I thought I would give you a history of Iraq, I'm sorry, of Iran, and the United States interference in that country, especially now that the Trump administration has bragged that it assassinated the top general in the Iranian government. You know that Iran was used to be known as Persia, and the Iranians have are very proud of their ancient history. Persia became a unified empire in 625 BC. So it's been an empire or a state for well over 2,500 years. The Roman Empire tried to conquer Persia, but it was not able to. Persia was ruled by an emperor. In modern times, the monarch was called a Shah. It was converted to the Shia branch of Islam by the middle of the 7th century AD. The Shia branch of Islam has many adherents throughout the Middle East, and Iran is its stronghold. Iran was ruled by a Shah until the revolution of 1979, when it became an Islamic republic. The assassination of Iran's top general, Qassem Soleimani, by the Trump regime will surely force the Iranian government to retaliate, as it said it would. This will in turn force the Trump regime to do the same. Then what? Unlike Iraq, which was invaded and occupied by the United States, Iraq's population is 25 million and was divided by several groups. Iran's almost homogeneous population is 80 million, four times the size of Iraq, and has a well-armed and trained military of 750,000. And it also has ties with Russia and China. In fact, China is dependent upon Iranian oil. It would take more than 1 million troops to even begin to subdue Iran if the United States foolishly chose to invade, not to mention the repercussions throughout the Middle East among Shia groups that live in many of those countries. The Iranians have had a very negative experience with the United States and the United Kingdom, and any aggressive action against their country would bolster their support for their present government. The following highlights that I wrote down outlines the reasons why so many Iranians are antagonistic toward the United States. In 1951, Mohammad Mossadegh was appointed prime minister by Shah Reza Pahlavi. He showed too much independence and was dismissed by the Shah, but was reinstated by popular demand. In 1953, a coup engineered by the US CIA and the UK M16 overthrew this progressive secular prime minister, Mossadegh, and installed Shah Reza Pahlavi as a dictator of the country. The oil industry had been nationalized, but now it was turned over to an international consortium led by British Petroleum. The Shah's regime, with the help of the United States and Israeli governments, eliminated any secular opposition. Only the influential fundamentalist Ayatollahs remained. In February 1979, a popular revolution overthrew the corrupt Shah, who fled to Egypt. President Carter allowed the Shah to be treated for cancer in the United States, and this prevented Iran from putting him on trial for crimes he had committed against the Iranian people. In retaliation, students took over the U.S. Embassy and held 444 hostages, including 52 Americans. Carter botched an attempt to free them, and this resulted in the defeat of Carter in the subsequent presidential election. Remember the deal Reagan made with Iran in order to circumvent Congress by selling weapons to Iran and using the money that he got to overthrow the Nicaraguan government? that's called the Iran-Contra scandal. The U.S. under Reagan and Bush armed Saddam Hussein's Iraq in its horrific war against Iran from 1980 to 1988, which killed more than 1 million people. A U.S.-guided missile cruiser, the USS Vincennes, shot down an Iranian airliner over Iranian airspace in 1988, killing 290 Iranians. President George H.W. Bush refused to apologize for that crime, even though he admitted to it. And finally, President Trump has pulled out of an international agreement negotiated to monitor Iran's construction of nuclear power plants. Trump then imposed sanctions which have made it impossible for seriously ill Iranians to get medicines they need, resulting in thousands of avoidable deaths. If the corporate media had informed Americans about this despicable history, Americans would have understood the legitimate reasons for Iran's animosity toward the United States. However, we know that the corporate media's profits depend on the financial support of the power elite that runs this country, so that the mass media will continue to keep most Americans disinformed. The rationale that the Trump regime gives to the American people is that Iran is a terrorist state and that getting rid of its top general will intimidate Iran and protect Americans. Well, the exact opposite will take place. Already, the Iraqi parliament has voted for a total withdrawal of U.S. troops. And the only opposition from the corporate Democratic Party is that Trump did not inform the Democratic leadership of his plans. This government has put the lives of Americans in grave danger. And that's my take on this assassination of this Iranian general.
Well, thank you for that, Tom. And as we remember the Iran-Contra deal and the money involved in infusion of cocaine in American communities of color. Remember, was it Freeway Willie in Los Angeles, who has a film out now telling his history, that the most cocaine he had seen before being introduced to the real business by CIA agents was 3.5 grams. And then he became the king of cocaine, spreading cocaine throughout black and brown communities in America to raise funds to do the Contras in, help me out here, Nicaragua. Okay, next up is 1966 with more information. 1966, your mic is open. Bill Doors, 1966.
Right, okay.
Your mic is open.
Recognize my number. Thank you. I just came on because I was actually on a call discussing the responses and emergency actions. I guess everyone has heard that Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps did righteously strike 2 U.S. bases in Iraq tonight. And last I heard, Trump and Pompeo and Mark Esper and Pence were at the White House. The murder of General Qasem Soleimani and of Abu Mahdi Mohandas. This was a cowardly sneak attack on 2 countries with which the U.S. is not at war, which is a war crime, and it was calculated to unleash more war and destruction across the entire region. It followed the murder of 25 Iraqi soldiers by the U.S. Air Force 4 days earlier. These murders are crimes against peace. It's the highest war crime under international law. And what the U.S. is doing is a global version of COINTELPRO, you know, the assassinations of leaders of the oppressed. Shortly after that, U.S. Marines began arresting, U.S. Marines arresting Iraqi legislators. And, of course, they claim this is against terror, but in fact, General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi Mohandas of the Iraqi People's Mobilization Units were the leading the fight against terrorism, against Al-Qaeda and ISIS in that part of the world. They were heroes. They were heroes. They were heroes in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon, where they helped organize the defeat of Israel in its racist 2006 invasion. Who would benefit from, for the last, it's now been 30 years, almost 30 years, the United States has been directly at war in that part of the world for no other reason. You know, millions have died, trillions of dollars have been spent, and there's been a massive theft from the working class and oppressed people of this country. It's been a massive theft from the people of the entire world. It's been a horror, a nightmare for people in Iraq, in Syria, in Libya, in Lebanon, in Yemen, where U.S.-made bombs are still falling. You know, I mean, the only difference, I mean, it's whether the F-35s are flying or carry the or F-16s carry the markings of the U.S. Air Force or the Israeli Air Force or the Saudi Air Force. They're all U.S. planes firing U.S.-made missiles, U.S.-made bombs. And hundreds of thousands have been killed directly in the last 30 years. Millions have died from sanctions, starvation, hunger, disease, displacement caused by these wars that ravaged the region. All so that U.S. monopolies could try to get a corner on the global energy market. That's what it's about. Now, the Trump regime in particular is a creature of the fracking industry. Of energy interests. I mean, Trump's whole proclaimed vision of, quote, making America great again is based on U.S. energy dominance. Some call it Saudi America. And the fracking industry, the fracking boom that took place in the first part of this century, first decade of the century, was a direct product of the Iraq War, of an asset price bubble. The Iraq War caused a bubble in energy prices that, when George Bush II was preparing to invade Iraq in 2003, the Secretary General of the Arab League at the time, Amr Moussa, warned him that you're going to be opening the gates of hell. Had Bush or any of his handlers like Cheney or Rumsfeld been able to answer honestly, they would have said, what's your point? And that's the idea. Because while the Iraq War is viewed by most people in the world as a disaster, the Iraq War and the wars that followed, for U.S. oil companies and the banks that invest in oil, they were not only a bonanza, and they were a lifesaver. In 1998, when the ruble collapsed, the price of oil fell to like $10 a barrel. And Clinton was begging U.S. oil companies to invest, and they said it's not worth it to invest in the former Soviet Union. They said it's not worth it. But that very same year, the technology was patented. It's now being used for the fracking, for the shale oil fracking, hydraulic fracturing that's going all over this country that's poisoning air, land, and water in native communities and all across this country. That's what making America great again means. It means poisoning and poisoning this country. But it was not profitable at those prices. And the Iraq War made it profitable. It created a bubble. Now that bubble has collapsed. And the fracking industry is in crisis. The Wall Street Journal wrote on January 1st, energy producers face big tab after shale oil bonanza. December 23rd, oil prices to slide despite OPEC cuts, banks predict. December 20th, energy giants confront glut with wave of write-downs. December 15th, manufacturers face new threats from fracking slump. It appears to me that the Trump regime is trying to recreate that bubble, once again paying for it with blood. There are those in the ruling class who are afraid of that. They're afraid of, you know, Trump's first Secretary of State was Rex Tillerson, who was a former CEO of ExxonMobil. Now, ExxonMobil controls much of Saudi Arabia's oil production. Saudi Arabia, let's be clear, is just a U.S. colony. Pays tribute to the United States. And they would lose badly if they could very well lose if a war broke out that would close the Straits of Hormuz or affect Saudi production. Mike Pompeo, he was known as the congressman from Coke Industries, the Koch brothers. They paid for his political career. Their main source of profit is fracking inside the United States. To them, that would be a bonanza. And I don't know if people remember, but the Iraq War really represented a vast transfer of wealth from the entire world into the U.S. economy, into the pockets of the U.S. ruling class. But it was also, of course, a vast theft from people in this country. You know, remember what happened to heating oil and gas right after that war? You know, the prices shot up, and Venezuela tried to help out poor communities in the United States. And of course, the U.S. targeted Venezuela. Venezuela also tried to help out Haiti, which is being badly hit by those energy price hikes.
Okay, could you give us...
Now Haiti cannot get Venezuelan oil. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Could you give us a conclusion?
Okay, well, the conclusion is this, that now, of course, we know the Democrats are concerned, you know, they don't want Trump to use this to tighten his war powers, to tighten his executive power. They also are somewhat responsive to their base, but we cannot count on them to stop the war. They'll rally around the flag when the heat is on. They rally around the dollar sign because when the profits are so big in this kind of looting, no one can stay out. It's urgent that the people of this country act and take actions. Now, as of last night, you know, we've called for national demonstrations around the country on January 25th, but as the situation is enveloping, we'll have to, I think people need to be ready to act sooner. We need to take to the streets and unprecedented numbers. We need to call on the troops to disobey orders. Because, you know, the U.S. military, they're talking about starting a war, allegedly, to defend the troops. Is anything more ridiculous than that?
All right. I have to conclude with that.
May I say a word somewhere in this program about Israel's role?
Okay. Very quickly.
Hello? All right. Okay.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I mean, there's other. I mean, Pompeo was in Israel twice this year. The second time is in October when he and Netanyahu apparently concluded an anti-Iran pact. Israel is very likely to join the war on the side of the United States if it erupts. But there's another factor. The first time he was there was to supervise a meeting between Israel, Italy, and Greece for a $7 billion pipeline to steal Palestinian gas from the waters off of occupied Palestine, off of Gaza, and sell it in Europe. And that project is also
because you've covered a lot of areas here.
Okay.
And
right,
because we have many people would like to speak, we have extended the program another half hour to 10:30, but I'm going to have to go to the next speaker, which is 0267. Your mic is open. Oh, 0267, your mic is open.
Who's that? Would that be Talib Shakur?
That's right, hello? Mr. Shakur. The mic is open.
Okay, how you doing, sir?
We're fine, but give us a report for the new year.
Right. Okay, great. I want to give a little report on my father, Dr. Mutulu Shakur. Those that don't know of him, he's a political prisoner that's been down for over 35 years for some trumped up charges. And right now he's battling with stage of 3 bone marrow cancer. So, you know, he want to send all his love and respects to all those that has been, you know, been there for him for all those years. And any type of, you know, support y'all could give, he definitely appreciate it, because we have a lot of elements that he's dealing with. Those that may not know, his website is Family and Friends, Dr. Mutulu Shakur. You'll be able to donate, or, you know, just send inspirational letters to him, so forth, so on. If you like to write him, all that information is definitely on the website as well, on the right-hand side. Right about now, I'm pushing a campaign to try to get funding to push a documentary that I'm put together in his behalf. Is dealing with a lot of individuals that was locked up with him, their home, they got their life changed around because of the leadership of him. So, you know, look into that documentary, because you're going to learn a lot about the man and before he was Dr. Mutulu Shakur. I've been blessed to know that he's been my father for over 4 years. I never knew he was my father until 4 years ago. So I've learned a lot. I've been to visit him, and that's one of the reasons why he really wanted to push this documentary, so you can find out a lot about him before and after, you know, his push in society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, thank you so much for that. And you could find more on Dr. Mutulu Shakur on the Jericho website.
And the Tulu's website.
Yeah, that is
on Mutulu's
Absolutely. MutuluShakur.com. That right there, you'd be able to find all the information you need on him. Then at the same time, go to Indiegogo, Mutulu Shakur. Then you'll see the donation drive that we're doing to push this documentary. It'll be on Indiegogo.com, and just push it in Mutulu Shakur, and it's going to pop up.
Okay.
Thank you so much for that, because this is a program dealing with political prisoners. And so next up is 4407.
Okay.
Ann Lamb, your mic is open.
All right. Always a honor and a privilege to be on this show. I'm so glad that Mutulu's son was able to speak. So I was also going to give an update on Mutulu. But very important, people should go to MutuluShakur.com. There's a lot of information about Mutulu there, all about, you know, Lincoln Detox and all the great work he was doing with the acupuncture and so on and so forth before his capture, you know, on trumped up charges. Absolutely. Mutulu himself has said he was convicted based upon his fingerprints on a public piece of propaganda, on a flyer. Like if I was handing out a flyer for Jericho, my fingerprints would be on it, and I could then get convicted of some crime. So he should have been released, you know, under old law, 30 years, you're out. So I know he is part of a class action suit about that, and that can continue. And he's also trying for the second round of compassionate release, because he was denied the first time on December 5th. So he's currently at the Lexington FMC, supposed medical center. I would encourage people definitely to write to him. You know, he also really needs the funds. The lawyers need the funds so they can, you know, now they go into court for the second round of compassionate release. And so they're trying to raise some funds for that, in addition to the film that his son is doing, which sounds really interesting, and I would love to see it. So, you know, it's a lot of work to be done for our political prisoners. Stage 3 bone cancer, bone marrow cancer, is got to be horrible. And, you know, if you go all the way back to April, he had been experiencing pain in his bones for a year, and he wasn't even x-rayed until April 2019. And the prison doctor suspected cancer and called for a CT scan, but they delayed that for 4 months. So, you know, this is what they do, you know, because they want all our prisoners to die inside. So, you know, they deliberately delay doing medical tests, providing medical relief, and so on and so forth. So I really encourage everybody to do that for Mutulu. Now, I believe Teresa Schultz is also going to be on here to talk about her dad, because she did text me shortly before to asking me for your number, which I did text her immediately. So hopefully she will be on. But Maroon also is suffering from stage 4 colorectal cancer and is getting chemo. And in this interesting place where they send everybody with cancer in Pennsylvania, SCI Fayette, just near Pittsburgh. And SCI Fayette is a toxic prison. It's built on like coal slag. There's a former coal mine, you know, right there. This is what the prison is built on. So, you know, you can imagine people are already sick and then they get sent there for treatment. Right. So I'm hoping that Teresa can, you know, update us on her dad, but that's also important. I know we haven't been on for a while. We also had the sad news that we lost our comrade, Robert Sattes, passed on December 21st up in Buffalo. And we're very sad to get that news, although we were also glad that due to the efforts of many people, he did not die inside, all right? And which was a big fear of many of us for many years because he was very sick. He had the diabetes that was never under control, congestive heart failure, high blood pressure, right? So even though he was on the outside where he was getting better treatment and he was surrounded by many people who loved him in Buffalo, they did have a beautiful memorial for him at Burning Books right before his burial the next day. We in Jericho are also organizing a celebration of his life, which will probably be happening here in New York City in February. I wanted to thank you, Ralph, for reading the Jericho statement for that. And also, on Tuesday next week, on next Tuesday, we'll be accompanying RAP, Release Aging People in Prison, and the Parole Preparation Project. And we will be going up to Albany because we are demanding that, you know, the powers that be in Albany take up these couple of laws that have been languishing, you know, in committee now for a couple of years. Two laws on parole, one of which would grant anybody who has been over 55 and has been inside for more than 15 years would be eligible to go to the board, no matter what their sentence is. And the other one is presumptive parole, which would be a big help for everybody because they would no longer be able to say, as they have done 12, if not 13 times to our friend Julio Muntakim, as they did many times to Herman Bell and to Seth and also to many other people, the nature of the crime is the reason that somebody gets denied. So that would no longer be permitted. They would have to look at who the person is now, see what they're doing now, you know, and no longer be able to put all this weight on the instant, what they call the instant offense. Okay. Now, the governor has this big program going, supposedly, that he started in 2017, Governor Cuomo. You know, oh, I encourage people to write to me about clemency and commutation of sentence, et cetera, et cetera. And he had been sitting on more than 100 cases that are sitting on his desk. He didn't grant anything in 2019. And then this year, he commuted the sentences of two, count them, two people, okay? So, you know, he likes to play that he's this progressive, but we know better. So we're going to put the heat up on him as well, and the Assembly and the Senate, and really push to get these laws passed. And then on the 21st, there's another group who's also going up, the Halt Solitary Campaign, because, you know, solitary confinement is considered to be torture, and it is an everyday occurrence in the prisons, not only in New York State, but all over this country. So there's a lot of work to be done in this year. We would definitely want to bring Matulu home. We would want to bring Maroon home. You know, anybody else who you would like to bring everybody home, but certainly prioritize those who are no longer, you know, in good health. Because, you know, it would be much better for everybody to be on the outside, getting their treatment out here, being surrounded by their families and loved ones, and not be in some damn prison cell, you know, where you're shackled to the bed most probably while you're getting your chemo. So, you know, it's really a horrible situation, for especially for the families, you know. Mutulu's son shouldn't have to, you know, suffer with his father like that. You know, Teresa and Sharon and Russell and the rest of the Schultz family shouldn't have to suffer with their dad going through what he's going through, you know. So, people, you know, it's time to step up to the plate, you know, give some money to Mutulu, give some money to his son for the film, give some money to Maroon. It doesn't have to be tons. Every little bit adds up. It adds up, you know. The lawyers need the money for the compassionate release round two, which actually goes to court, goes in front of a judge. It's no longer up to the warden or central BOP to decide this. It now gets actually into the courts, which is probably a better chance for Mutulu than, you know, relying on BOP for sure. So, you know, we have a commitment in Jericho. Our commitment is to free everybody. That's what we say. What's the call? Freedom all. And we mean it. So, you know,
thank
everybody
for that,
please,
Ann.
Please.
We've been saying, and we insist on this program, death camps by denial of medical treatment. Let us always remember that. Death camps and the army of occupation. And now we must go to 8672. 8672, your mic is open.
Yes. Hello. This is Joel here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Hello? Yes.
Yes,
okay.
We hear you, Joel.
Yes. Well, I've been listening to the discussion, and we have to, I think, locate what's the latest events. The assassination that took place the other day in the in Iraq of one of the leading anti-imperialists in the entire area. It's strange, you know, they people accept somehow that he's called a terrorist, and they say, well, he's a horrible person. He killed so many Americans. What they don't tell you is that those Americans were occupying a country in their beloved region of the world that had they had invaded Iraq, and that's why they were, American troops were in Iraq at all. The Iraqi people never asked the Americans to invade Iraq. They did this on their own, and I shouldn't say on their own, as well. Mention later, but they are there occupying and colonizing and destroying a neighboring nation of Iran, and then they say that those who are resisting that, those who may have been in battle with American troops, they're the wrong ones. The right ones are the occupiers, the Americans. And really a disgraceful situation that people have the story in reverse, or as Malcolm X put it, they make the criminal look like the victim and the victim look like the criminal. And that I think whenever you hear that word terrorism, you should hear how it's applied. The American occupation of Iraq itself and the invasion thereof and the build up to it, these were all based on terrorism and brute force and the most advanced weaponry in the world designed to kill thousands or tens of thousands of people in order to take over that independent country and to turn it into an American military base. Now, people are concentrating on the oil in that area, and the oil is an important thing. But there was no obstacle to the Americans obtaining that oil or marketing it. A lot of people don't realize that even when those countries nationalized their oil, the American British financial networks are the ones that market that oil around the world, and they get the lion's share of the profits. And that was true before the Iraq War, and of course it's truer now. It's still going on. But the force, the other major motive for this entire thing behind what we can call the 9/11 wars, because 9/11 was the pretext for getting involved in the war, in these wars, mainly in the Muslim world, starting with Afghanistan and then jumping over to Iraq. And when you stop to think that this was the pretext that led to the occupations of those two countries, which is still going on. Now, when I say that they jumped over from Afghanistan to Iraq, which, by the way, was never even accused of having anything to do with 9/11, what they jumped over was Iran. Iran is right between Afghanistan and Iraq, so that they set up the possibility of a two-front war against Iran in that initial invasion and occupation and massacre of the people of all of those countries. Now, the Israeli factor should not really be ignored, because when you look at 9/11 and you ask who benefited the most, then you see that this was a war. This was a pretext for sucking the United States into a war against the so-called enemies of Israel. Why? Because it opens the way to control of all of those other countries through occupations and invasions by this country that's sold as being a small surrounded country. And you have to look at the politics behind it also. In order to pull off 9/11 and the wars that resulted after 9/11, it was necessary to put George W. Bush and his entourage, including Cheney, the vice president, Rumsfeld, the so-called defense secretary — it should be called the aggression secretary — and a whole host of neocons that were actually running the country during the now, a neocon means somebody who's part of a faction, many of whom are dual American-Israeli citizens. Some of them are not quite dual citizens, but they're in a certain way Israel firsters. And that whole administration was set up in order to react to the planned 9/11 as the pretext to which got them into the Middle East in the first place. And that involved, for example, the whole controversy in Florida, where the election was stolen. If you remember, on election night, they said that, I think, NBC had called Florida for Al Gore against Bush. And they switched to the Bush ranch, where they announced, where a reporter mentioned that and asked the Bush family that was sitting around the table what they think. And George W. Bush said, "Look, my brother is the governor of Florida, and he will deliver that state to me. He will deliver that state to me." Now, if he didn't deliver that state and cheat the entire elections, which was proven by a huge media consortium that did a recount of the vote after the fact — I believe the results were announced on November 11th of that year — they proved that Gore had actually won by several thousand votes. Now, the difference between Gore and Bush, the George W. Bush, is that the George W. Bush people were part of planning the succession to 9/11 into this Middle East war. The neocons, that's who was driving the entire thing, and that's why they had to steal the election in order to get W and their entourage into the White House. And that's another part of the history, and it shows how much influence. You know, when we talk about a government being controlled by corporations, we have to remember that governments are corporations. And a government outside the United States, which is a corporation, which has a lot of money and which has a lot of people who it can consider sympathizers that it manipulates within the country. You know, they say that Putin and Russia interfered with the election. Yes.
Did you
There's
conclude?
Nobody that interferes with the elections like the Israelis, and they got what they wanted with 9/11 at the expense of 3,000 lives to begin with.
Okay, thanks for that. And we all know that Saddam Hussein was not guilty of 9/11. Bush and Blair lied and made the American people say amen, and they're still saying amen to the lie. Next up is Gwen Goodwin, Gil Obler, and then Gwen. 5445. Your mic is open.
It's 4453, by the way.
Okay.
But this is Gil.
New number.
Yeah, sorry. My cell phone doesn't work well when I call in, so I'm calling from the home phone. First I wanted to talk about Mamiya and then about the world events that everyone else has touched on. It's been a really rough year for our coalition, but a good year for Mamiya. About a year ago, we won the right to appeal Mumia's case. The DA, about a year ago also, D.A. Krasner in Philadelphia, found 6 boxes of materials which were hidden from the case files and revealed that to the public. Our lawyers and their lawyers have seen what's in those boxes. We haven't, but everyone is acting like it's material. So that's kind of exciting. The case, we don't know when, but sometime, hopefully this year, the case will be heard in either the Superior Court or the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. We don't know yet, and we don't know which city yet. So at the same time, our website was hacked with viruses. The hosting company offered us an option of site lock, but that would have meant taking tremendous amounts of money, basically 10 times what we were paying for hosting, enough for 8 buses, enough for hundreds of thousands, if not more, flyers that we could print. We just weren't going to do that. We weren't going to raise tremendously more money just to protect the website. Thankfully, a member of our coalition was a security expert. I've been working maintaining the content, but I don't know anything about website security. But she knew a tremendous amount, and she found an option for us. The website is now back up. It's not 100% secure, but it's virus-free, and she's in the process of moving the content to a secure server. So this is going to allow us to keep the website operational and spend the money on organizing and not on on security. We're also moving our email from Yahoo, which basically had hijacked our data, to a modern, whether it's MailChimp or some other technology, but we want to move it to a modern email system, which will allow for graphical emails and better maintenance and easier maintenance, and also opening it up so people can start to register again onto our list. We need to scrub the list before we get on that because there's so many bad emails that we would get blacklisted immediately if we just moved to MailChimp. So, you know, now there's 2 tech people instead of 1, but we can use more people who know technology, or even if you don't, people who can just help us with the data, just scrubbing the data and getting rid of the bad email addresses so we don't get blacklisted. This is really exciting because, as I said, we're close to reopening the case. Recently, Maureen Faulkner, the widow of Officer Faulkner, tried to get the DA in Philadelphia, who hasn't been our friend, mind you, but who did reveal the existence of these boxes, tried to get him kicked off the case. That was denied on December 3rd by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. The fact that they're freaking out so badly means they know, just as we know, that if the case is reopened, we have so many facts that show that his trial, Mumia's trial, was wrong. There was a witness, a cabbie. We have photographic evidence that he wasn't where he testified he was. We have memos that he expected to be paid off by the DA, Joe McGill, and that he actually had a suspended license and was allowed to keep driving. So basically witness tampering. We know that Alphonse Giordano, who testified falsely that Mumia had confessed, but omitted that from the report the day of. It's completely beyond credulity. It was only a month or two later that he suddenly claimed to remember the confession, and yet he wasn't at the trial at the time, we thought, because he was on vacation. But it turns out, and we have proof of this now, that he was under federal scrutiny for gambling, extortion, and payoffs. So he was a crooked cop. These are just two. There was jury selection, many other bases on which the case is, but also the new evidence, which we haven't seen yet. And the fact that the other side is freaking out so badly means that there's even more exculpatory evidence in those boxes as soon as that becomes revealed. So it's we need people's help. If people can contact freemomia.com to help us with the data scrubbing, or just to organize buses, organize people to go into the communities and educate them. I just wanted to turn quickly. I don't want to repeat everything that Tom and Joel and Bill said about the Iran situation, but there are just a couple of things I wanted to mention, if that's okay. One is the Shah. The Shah was not just a puppet of British Petroleum. The Shah also was an ally of Israel at the time. And at the time, Israel was also an ally of South Africa, apartheid South Africa, and developed nuclear weapons with the assistance of uranium from South Africa. So this was an axis of imperialism and conquest. another thing I wanted to mention, Carter didn't just bring the Shah to New York for geopolitical reasons. He was actually, it's been revealed in recently declassified documents, but it was known pretty broadly at the time at the behest of David Rockefeller, and obviously that's oil money. Richard Allen, who was involved in sabotaging the peace talks with Vietnam so that Nixon could get elected in 1968, was also involved in making sure there was no deal between Jimmy Carter and the Iranians before Reagan got elected. So, again, some of the behind-the-scenes actions. Skullduggery, exactly. And Oliver North was also involved in sabotaging that Desert One rescue mission. Seymour Hersh wrote a great article about that in the 80s. The other thing is Soleimani was actually, as was mentioned, involved in defeating ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and Daesh, all of whom are funded by Saudi Arabia, and probably also covertly working with Israel. So, Israel and Saudi Arabia are part of the axis that, in fact, Netanyahu this week openly said that he wants war. Everyone else is saying, calm down, trying to stop anything from happening. But Israel and Saudi Arabia clearly want war and are pushing the neocons in the Trump administration to pursue that. Trump was recently, Finland is not allowing him in because of his sexist, misogynist, pro-rape things. But a lot of the European allies and also hasn't been that well reported, but Iran had joint military exercises with China and Russia. So this situation is way more dangerous than people are, than the corporate press is allowing.
Anyway, thank you so much for that. And the reason why I love hosting this program is I constantly learn several things that I had not known about. And thanks again. And next we are going to 3933. Gwen Goodwin, your mic is open. Gwen Goodwin, your mic is open. I guess not. 1-8-8-5.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay, just a minute. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Hi. Gwen, okay. I'm just putting my earphones in. Okay. Thank you for everybody's contribution so far tonight. Very much, you know, of course, the same things on my mind. And Joel talked about the war games between Russia and China with me last night, and I tried to bring that up on NPR radio today, but that wasn't going to be allowed to get through. But I thought it was something that was important that maybe be fleshed out a little bit more. I feel kind of defeated tonight. I was, you know, watching the news, and then more news came on right after it that, you know, we're starting another war. I mean, you know, they fire back tonight at some of our bases. I think like everybody else, this whole thing is preposterous. I think the way the media is also selling it is crazy. This man was a general. Generals, what they do is they go to war and they fight and they kill people. So I don't think we can run around and say he killed 600 Americans. I agree with Joel. I mean, we were over there. That's what generals do. And if that's the way we're going to start doing things, I guess that now we're going to start seeing people over here, you know, firing on our generals as well. Not that I really care at this point, but I'm just saying that it really changes things again, and I think makes it even more lethal. I also think it's kind of eerie that at the same time that this is going on, Australia, almost the whole country is on fire, and all of this is going back to the root of everything, and that's the oil. And everybody is fighting over the oil and dying for the oil, but it is the oil that is killing us. And isn't that a strange place to be? So I would you know, have to concur that I think I haven't heard too many news reports calling this guy evil and all that other stuff. I was kind of surprised when I called my mother and she was talking about how detrimental this guy was. And I thought, this is really crazy. I mean, we literally killed millions of people in Iraq in an illegal war. And I was at almost every anti-war protest for that. And I would have been very happy had we impeached Bush. But I want to bring it back to this current impeachment, because I really believe that Donald Trump did do this as an answer to his impeachment. And I just want to ask everybody who thinks that this guy shouldn't be impeached, you know, because I get the feeling talking to some people, even on the left, that just don't think that what he has done rises to any occasion that he should be impeached. And I just want to know, do you think it's time for him to be impeached? Because I think that this is a great vehicle to impeach him. And yes, I do think he should be impeached, because I think that he is so crazy and so unpredictable that he does not rival anyone else. He is different. He is different from everyone else. They were all criminals. But this guy is by himself. I don't even think this guy knew one thing about the guy that he assassinated the other day. And I will say, I'm also very happy to hear the proper word being used here. This was an assassination. It was like this little pissant Trump, you know, ran up to somebody's car and threw a rock in the window and then ran away. That's what we have. We have a six-year-old child running the country, and he's out of control, and he's having, you know, he's having all kinds of fits because he's being impeached. And now he's bringing us to, I don't know. I mean, this looks really bad to me. This looks pretty bad, because I don't know how we can smooth things over. And if tonight's any indication, I don't think, I don't know whether we're going to be. And I do think that Israel has a part to play in here. And it does look to me like they're the only people that are, Netanyahu at least, is the only person who's happy about this. But to me, this is a big hornet's nest. I don't know how we're going to get out of this or if we can get out of this, but I don't care. I think Trump should be impeached, and I think he should have been impeached yesterday. And I don't even almost care who you put in his place, but I think that he is very dangerous, and more dangerous than we thought. And basically, it was interesting listening to tapes of him last night talking about when Obama was running for president. And that he kept saying that Obama was going to attack Iran because Obama did not think he was going to get in office again. So this would be the great time. And Trump kept, you know, talking about this this scheme that Obama would be playing out. And in fact, it is him. He he's the one who played the scheme out. He did exactly what he said Obama was going to do, except that Obama did not do it. And it's really a shame, because I think that we were coming to a place, not a perfect place, but certainly I think things look more settled and more peaceful, at least under the first agreement than they have in years. And, you know, nothing is perfect, but to me, this is just a big hornet's nest. So I guess I don't have anything more to report than I'm really worried, really disappointed, and I can't help but think about Armageddon, because it really looks pretty bad out there. The world looks pretty bad, and it looks a lot worse than I think I've ever seen it, and I don't think we've ever even seen things like this. We've never seen a whole continent on fire before, and there it is. There's Australia, 500 million animals dead, innocent animals that we pigs called humans went and slaughtered because we had to have all this junk around us that makes us feel better because we're so goddamn insecure. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there. Sorry. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for that, Glenn Goodwin. Next up, 3933. Your mic is open. Or 1885. Mistake there. 1885. Sister Shirley, your mic is open.
Okay. Last night, I came on late because I had a problem in my place with a leak, but I have since taken care of it, and I missed a good 45 minutes of it, but it's all good what I have heard. I am very appreciative that it's the word is getting out, and I'm learning more and more, and I need to put more of that out, and we need to have more people come and listen to what's being said, because a lot of people are in the dark, and we just have to deal with what's coming, and we have to come together. And Trump shouldn't even have been the president in the first place, but this is how the system is, and things like this happened, and it's not surprising. But I really wanted to share with you that I have some wonderful news, and some people know, but most don't, that Juanita Young, she is one of the people who had her son murdered by the cops back in 2000. And she had her grandchildren taken away by the ACS, but they have since come home, and the whole case was dismissed. And they've been home since before Christmas. So I'm really glad to be able to share that with you all. Her son was named Malcolm Ferguson. Okay.
Yes.
And she's doing quite well now, because it was really stressful making her end up in the hospital and all that. So tried to give her as much support, and she's doing much better. And I also want to share with you what's been happening with Ramsey. They put Ramsey, for those of you who don't know it, but you should. He is our true people's hero, who took that video of his friend, Ramsey Orta, being modern-day lynched by the cops. They put him back in the box. No reason. They just do it. And this happened before Christmas, at least 2 weeks before Christmas, and also he's not going to get out until February 1st. So we all need to give him our support and let the people know that we have his back. It's been really trying for him. He was denied parole 3 times. The last time was in December, and then before that in August. And we're trying to make sure that he gets the help that he needs and he gets out in July. And what we really would like, if we could get some people who have some type of connections to make sure that he can get the support from lawyers to enable him not to have to come back to Staten Island, where he still is targeted. And even in prison too. He's in a prison that's 8.5 hours away, one way, from his home and his support systems. And we need people to really let the system know that we have him and support him. And he really needs to be acknowledged as the hero that he is. And
can you tell us one video that he took that was so very important?
Okay. What the thing is, people don't know that before Eric Gardner, there were two other people that we know of on Staten Island that were choked to death by the police. The first one was in 1994, and this brother's name was Ernest Seance, and he lived in this area we called Little Liberia because it was a Liberian community, and the cops went at him, roughed him up, and choked him out, and they tried to get justice, but of course there was none. And even the majority of Staten Islanders didn't know about it. And then the second one was in 2002. This brother named Alfred Nelson, he went to the hospital on his own accord. We call the hospital Barely Breathing, but the hospital is named Barely Seated. He went to emergency psych, did not want to stay there, and they choked him out at the gate. Now, there's this brother, I call him Sharp Ass. He knew of it. He knew of Alfred Nelson being choked by the cops. And he didn't say or do anything because they didn't roll with him the way he wanted them to roll with him. So he is truly not there for all of us the way people really think that he is. He is really not a leader. And he is also for, I think it's called, I can't remember the number, it's called something 92 or something like that, where the cops could still say they were afraid for their lives and kill us. So this is what Sharp Ass is about. And if it wasn't for Ramsey taking that video, we wouldn't know about Eric either. He just would have been another dead Negro on Staten Island, choked to death by the cops. And as you can see, this system is telling us, you know what? Doesn't make a difference. When the cops do something, it's all right. But when anybody else does something, then we're held accountable. It doesn't make a difference. And then what they're doing, and so it's horrendous what's happening with Jewish people right now. But you know what? They're making a big to-do out of it when everything is big. And it's not just the what's happening to Jewish people. It's what's happening to us all these years, for many, many years. And this white supremacist country continually does this to us. And we have a lot of house Negroes out there, and Sharp Ass is one of them. So we have to come together and call out people who we know is not really there for us because they make it worse. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for that, Sister Shirley. And at the end of this program of political prisoners, I am uplifted in this holiday season because I have a letter from Jan Lahman, and it goes this way. Red Season's greetings, and he did a drawing on it that is beautiful. Ho, 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 for freedom, justice, and peace. And let's hope and keep working for a new year, new decade of a renewed freedom struggle that so many people and our planet so need. In the spirit of Richard Williams and Tommy Manning. Dear Ralph, ho ho and hello. Let me send you, all family and close people, warm, positive, helpful, and hopeful Red Season's greetings. How are you? How is the family? Of course, I hope you, Brenna, everyone is doing all right in life, living, struggle, and more. I'm okay myself, doing and teaching a lot of yoga and more as my May 2021 parole date gets closer, and he laughs. And it is our job to do something about that. Well,
here in Trump's America, impeachment, wildfires, and a declining empire, what can we say? La luce continue. Have a nice holiday, Christmas, Kwanzaa, and more. Jan Lahman. And you can go to Jericho to find out and to how you write to Jan Lahman is 10372016 United States Penitentiary, McCreary, McCreary, P.O. Box 3000, Pine Knot, Kentucky, 42635. We will be doing more of Jan Lahman as his parole date comes up again, and we need 100,000 signatures to free Jan. We can't allow these death camps to hold our people, because that's what they are, and they have done so many wrong. They have killed so many of our political prisoners in the death camps. We cannot let it happen again. Thank you. Next, we have an open mic now. So,
Ralph, this is
the mic open.
Can I add something?
Go ahead.
Yeah, so a couple of things I forgot to say, and Gwen reminded me when she talked after me, just to consider it, kind of get lost in all the crisis right now. One is that when Trump withdrew the troops that were protecting the Kurds, he actually didn't leave Syria. They actually went to the oil fields in northern Syria. Now, and in December, it was revealed that they have actually been stealing the oil from Syria, and Assad is actually planning to sue to try to recover those funds. And that related to the recent headline when Iraq voted to that U.S. troops should leave. Trump replied that basically they should pay reparations to the United States for all the military bases they built there, which reminds me of Haiti paying reparations for rebelling against France for over 100 years. They paid reparations, I think, until the 1940s.
Wow.
So, you know, this is very clearly about, you know, stealing resources, both in Syria and Iraq and everywhere else. And the other thing that might have gotten lost is just this week, because, you know, there's so much going on, Trump violated the U.N. Charter by not allowing Iran's ambassador to the U.N. to come to New York to address the Security Council.
Right.
I wanted to say something, too, Ralph. Could I add on to mine?
Yes, you can.
It's Gwen. I just wanted to hi, it's Gwen again. I just wanted to thank Shirley for bringing up this point, because it was a point that I intended to make earlier tonight, and I guess I got lost in the war games. But I too have been troubled. I am not advocating that anyone should be attacking anyone, and I don't think that anti-Semitism is a good thing, but it is very insulting, I think, to the black population to see that there have been a couple of attacks and we're ready to send the National Guard in. And yet, thousands of black people are killed every year in this country by the police. And no one thinks that this is an emergency or an epidemic or somebody has to step in and start doing something. It just marches along. And it must be such a slap in the face to the black culture here in the United States to see that there's no emergency on that. But there's an emergency, and there's, you know, the National Guard being called in for these couple of incidents that have happened at synagogues. And, again, I'm not advocating anti-Semitism. I do take it seriously. But when you look at the numbers, and you look at just the numbers, the raw data, I mean, clearly there's an emergency going on in the black community with the murdering of black citizens every single day of the year, and simply no willingness to follow it up with any action, any real action. So I'm glad Shirley brought that up, and I just also want to thank Shirley for also bringing up Ramsey. It's a very important case, and she's right about it. And I'm so happy that she's been talking about it, because a lot of people only know him by the guy that took the film. And, you know, as soon as you stop seeing it on TV, it just drops out of your mind. But she's completely right, and thank God she keeps us fresh in our memory. I mean, already I'm trying to think of what I can do to help. So I wanted to thank her for bringing those points up. Okay, that's it.
Well, thank you so much for that, Gwen. But one of the things that we say over and over and over again on this program, we must understand the nature of our army of occupation, of their army of occupation. We euphemistically call them police, peacekeepers. They keep the black community in line. That's what they were formed to do. They came out of the slave watchers, the slave catchers. This is where the American police force started, and it is still there. The army of occupation. That is their job, to keep the black community intimidated and in our place. And that is, when you see that is what they do, they're just doing their job. There's no emergency there. And when we talk about freeing our political prisoners, they are death camps. Let's stop calling them prisons, because time after time after time, our people are killed by denial of medical help as they get older. Tommy Manning, which I had just mentioned, how they watched his operations. Richard Williams. Come on, folks. The list goes on and on and on, and our job is to end this continuation of death of our political prisoners by denial of medical treatment. And remember Lynn Stewart with the cancer she had.
And something I just wanted to bring up. I'm Ernesto Stewart. One of the things I noticed you said, Gwen, you're commenting on anti-Semitism, and I just think it's really important to think about how linguistics plays into our consciousness and how we understand things. So it's like, let's say when someone says anti-Semitic, you think they mean, oh, they hate Jews or they're against Jews. So what is it when someone's anti-Hispanic? They're just racist. If they're anti-Black, they're just racist. If they're anti-Asian, they're racist. You can be homophobic, you can be, we should be very, very mindful about these words and the protections they grant some people and not other people. But when reality is, the system is targeting us. The system is not targeting Semitic people, but the system is targeting brown people. And so you should think about linguistics and how that helps, how that forms your interpretation of what's going on around you. Because what's going the subversion that they use using linguistics helps them change how you think about things. And you,
that's
just
true.
Just it's an idea.
Thank you so
that's
much
true.
For that, Ernesto Stewart. I hear another voice. What were you saying?
Oh, I was agreeing with that. I was agreeing with that. Also, it was interesting to see that all these people came out, you know, and marched over to Brooklyn Bridge. And another thing that gets equated with being anti-Semitic is being against the Zionist entity, because a lot of them were carrying Israeli flags. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that there's plenty of Jewish people in the Zionist entity who do not agree with the Zionist entity. Right. And so, you know, you can't equate, you know, this is something that, speaking of semantics, that they often do. You know, if you're against the Zionist entity, you are therefore anti-Semitic. And then that is not true. And then people also forget the Palestinians are Semites too. All right?
Right?
So, you know, I have nothing against any community standing up against being attacked. But if you're going to equate anti-Semitism with anti-Zionism, which often happens in this country, this is a big problem. And this happens a lot. It happens a lot. You know, if you say things against the Zionist entity, you are then told that you're being anti-Semitic. And I'm like, well, I support the Palestinians. They're Semites. It's their land, too. You know,
mm-hmm.
so excuse me, right, what other people in the entire history of the world was told, after you did suffer a horrible thing, the Holocaust, you were not the only ones, but you were a majority, 6 million of your people were slaughtered, 6 million other people were also slaughtered. I didn't see any of those other 6 million people getting their own little country somewhere, right? I'm of Irish descent. Nobody said, hey, you Irish people can finally have your entire country. We wouldn't mind. We didn't come and try to take somebody else's, you know. I mean, you know, just historically speaking, you know, that's like so weird. But, you know, it's all set up for a reason. You know, the whole Balfour Declaration and going back to, you know, post-World War II when all this started. You know, there was a whole, you know, reason behind it that had nothing to do with people feeling, you know, appalled by what had happened to all these people during the Holocaust. Because if they really cared about that, they wouldn't be doing the same thing now to the Palestinians that was done to them by the Nazis. If you weren't able to.
Thanks again, and look forward to seeing everybody next week. We will have an hour program. Thank you, my brothers and sisters.